Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable panel for this Wednesday morning. It's very nice to have you with us. It's the 23rd of November. It's the day before Thanksgiving. We wish all of you a very happy Thanksgiving and have a lovely Thanksgiving weekend. This will be our last show till Monday, so we'll try to cram in a lot today.
Speaking of cramming.
Yes, we'll get you, that's right, we'll get you ready for your holiday discussions at the dinner table. We'll get you, give you some talking points. We'll get you ready. Everything will be fine. Good morning. Let me introduce our panel to you, and we'll be ready to go. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Hello, but I really want an egg roll. I'm ordering it, then, Matt. I want an egg roll.
Rosemary Armeo is the director of the journalism program at the University at Albany, and it's a great pleasure to have her join us this morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm saying I'll leave it at that.
Thank you. You don't want any food?
No food.
All right. Rich Onan, he is with us. He is a corporate attorney, and he is back by popular demand, as I mentioned in the introduction.
Well, back by some kind of demand.
Yes,
I don't know if it's
popular. We're very excited. And then my right brain said that Ira was going to be in tomorrow, but then my left brain remembered that we had a holiday. So Ira's in the building doing media projects. So we asked Ira if he would join us, and he very nicely came in.
Well, I feel as if I'm an interloper, the fourth wheel of a party. But you know, Ira's in the building sounds like Elvis has left the building. So I'm going to take it.
I think you're all good.
Anyway,
and you and Rich have never been together.
I've heard Rich, and I told him now instead of two against one, it's three against one. But he looks like he's up for it.
I think it's all good. And what I like about this is that we can try out this new dynamic to see how that works.
There's always room for another voice on this station, right? Plenty of time. Everybody gets lots of chances to talk.
It's just like our Thanksgiving holiday table. I like it. We just need sort of like a horn of plenty in the center of our round table.
I'd like it better if there were like some mashed potatoes I could dig into at the moment.
Or
an egg roll.
I'm looking at Alan because, as the regular listeners will know, Alan does feel sometimes that he doesn't want to eat more than he should eat. And I'm wondering if you really get into the Thanksgiving dinner.
Every year I say one slice of turkey, a tiny little spoonful of stuffing. Maybe just a little bit of Brussels sprouts, and that's what I put on my plate. It's very clear, and then I eat that. And then I go back.
I was going to say that.
Well, let's talk about stuff. We'll talk a little bit about Thanksgiving later on, and check in with everybody about their traditions, and maybe hear from some listeners as well. But before we do that, let's go to what is making news. I guess the headline out of this morning comes in the form of the announcement that Nikki Haley has been officially named to be our ambassador to the UN, and that was the appointment that was made this morning. I think we can probably talk about that quickly, and then, of course, I want to talk about the president-elect's meeting with the New York Times yesterday. Nikki Haley?
I think it's a good appointment. Obviously, she's somebody who is articulate. The person who is at the United Nations is hardly has to be somebody who makes policy. They may advise the State Department and others, but basically they work for the president and for the State Department, and they do what they're told.
Yay, she's not a man. Yay, she's not white. Yay, she's not a Nazi, so we're ahead.
Is that what you're thankful for today?
You have a checklist now for each one. Not
she
a Nazi.
She is in, of course, a harmless position. Even Eleanor Roosevelt was given this one. But I do prefer her to say John Bolton, who might have gotten it.
And also very has been very critical of
yes.
Donald Trump in the past.
Yes.
Rich Onan, what do you make of the...
I think it also probably puts her on a track come a few years from now. It kind of fills out some holes in her resume that I think could make her a major player in Republican Party politics. She's got the executive experience, and now she's going to add the foreign policy experience. I think it's
she
gonna,
has no foreign policy experience.
That's correct.
Except that her parents are Indian.
Which is why I said this will fill the hole in her resume, Rosemary, by being the UN ambassador.
She's going to gain it.
Yes.
Okay. I thought you meant the hole.
But do we want
in the
somebody
Trump
getting? Yeah. We want somebody to get on the job training.
Well, doesn't everybody? Doesn't everybody get on the job training?
She can do this job. I don't disagree with that.
I think a couple of years from now, she will have been kind of imbued with the foreign policy issues and will become a contender in the Republican Party in terms of when they start talking about who's next and who's on the bench.
Right. I agree with that.
I think Trump has got us, those of us who don't like Trump, he's got us where he wants us because he makes an appointment like Nikki Haley. And there might have been a time when we'd say, Nikki Haley, why would we want her as UN ambassador? But she seems like somebody who's sane and not all the way to the far end of the spectrum. And so much like there was such rejoicing over the possibility of Mitt Romney being, he's not Rudy. So there's your qualification. So he's got us where
exactly
he wants us.
You're exactly right. Exactly right.
All right. So, and then I guess the other only as far as appointment news, according to Ben Carson, he has been offered the job at HUD. The Trump administration has not, the transition team has not said yes or no. He said that the offer is on the table. So, and he, who had earlier said he didn't felt that he was ready for any of those, that he did not have the skills for any of those jobs. Has now said that he's considering it, but has said that he will eventually
make up his mind. You want to make Ben Carson Surgeon General? I'm right there with you. But why HUD? Again, what's his credentials to be a HUD cabinet?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, look, Andrew Cuomo came from there, and not sure what his credentials were at the time either. And of course, that didn't work out very well either. I'm not sure what the policy is going to be. I'm not sure if there's a policy that he's going to be expected to carry out, or if it's just a reaching out to kind of that community, which I say in a cynical way.
Yeah. Rosemary, what do you make?
Well, if he has to have a position, which I'm not sure why he does, he himself did not find himself to be qualified. It might as well be HUD. I think you can limit the damage there. Andrew Cuomo did not do a good job, and they managed to fix that over. So he can't. He's limited.
Why do we still have HUD?
Good question. If you can eliminate a department, why not that one?
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to understand what they – I understand the whole UDAG grants and all that, but just what
housing and urban development.
Yeah, but and how has housing and urban development gone?
Which
over
used
the last
to be HEW,
years?
Correct? Housing, education, and welfare.
No,
I thought it was health, education, and welfare.
Oh, health. That's what I mean. Yeah. Health, education, and welfare.
So I'm thinking you have it because if you're a Democrat and you have a huge housing shortage, particularly in your cities, this is a symbolic way in which you assure people that you are working on the problem. If you happen to be somebody on the other side of the aisle, you may feel this is a department which we don't really need.
If we just discussed this on the Media Project, but if we did not hear piecemeal who the choices are for these cabinet positions, and we let Trump and his people do whatever it is they have to do to vet these people, and on whatever date he wants, he announced, okay,
here's
my
cabinet.
Would the public be mad that it didn't come out piecemeal, or would we all be better served without this
Absolutely.
Circus that has been going on of who's in, who's out, and much of it, I think, uninformed. I love the phrase because I use it a lot, idle speculation.
Yep.
Yes, but you're right, Ira. But on the other hand, he's the president-elect. He's an expert at branding. He's an expert at playing the apprentice or whatever you call it. And he knows that this is a way to keep attention. Sure.
And he should not be calling the shots. Yes, you're right about that. But he doesn't get to decide what's in the press. The press on its own could decide, okay, hey, when you're done, let us know. In the meantime, we're going to be looking into what happened with the election. We still haven't looked into voting supposed irregularities. And we're going to look into your taxes, which we still haven't seen. And those 500 businesses around the world that you say have nothing to do with the presidency.
And
see you soon.
And they will do that, and they should do it. But let me tell you right now, they are also going to cover every day who goes into one of his branded places, the golf course or the Trump Towers, and announces.
He's now moved to Florida.
Yeah, He's now in Florida.
He's now in Florida,
and he knows exactly what he's doing. By the way,
why is he changing the scenery? It's great. He's conducting his presidency like a TV show. It's really masterful.
But then why? With the TV comment, which I agree with, why is he not doing what has been a tradition, and it could tie into his TV strength, which is after you have decided on an appointment, have an announcement where you and the appointee
make an appearance.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be a big deal. Today I'm pleased to announce that Nikki Haley is going to be the U.N. representative.
Everything Trump does is different than how the establishment has done it. It's play acting, and everything he does looks different and unique, and we're not the old way.
I want to get Rich's take on this, but I do have to say, I mean, you look at the announcement of Mike Pence, and that was very strange, too, because he
talked about himself.
He came out, he spoke for a really long time. Mike Pence came out, and then he left. So it wasn't traditional in that sense either. So, ladies and gentlemen, Nikki Haley, yes. I'm going to Florida. Goodbye.
I have to make some phone calls.
That's right. Rich?
I'm not offended by the transparency of the process, and I'm surprised to hear that others are. I think if he had come out with a full slate and kind of—
I don't know if offended is the word.
If you're going to air and—look, yes, there's no question that he's a showman. I don't think that comes as a surprise to anybody on either side. I don't mind the fact that this is going on in the open, and the press, it's up to the press. You know, Rosemary's right. Press doesn't have to pick it up.
Right.
You know?
He's working to his own advantage. I can't fault him for that. But we, at a time where we do not have the resources mm-hmm. to do both, we can't cover all the press pool stuff and the speculation and do the real reporting that's needed. Mm-hmm. And so we ought to be making some harder decisions than I've seen so far.
Well, I like the cut of your jib. I agree with you, Rosemary. I absolutely do agree with you that that's what the press ought to be doing. But Ortschmort, that's not the way it's going to happen. Trump is a master at this, and he's going to continue to do what he's doing. And let me tell you, you're going to have to be there when he has an onion. And that gets caught in his throat.
Dig in its heels when he had the meeting with the Prime Minister of Japan.
Yes.
And they would not allow photographers in, and they handed out pictures, and the press did not run the pictures. They got together, and they basically said, "We're not going to run this. We have to be there. We're not."
Though we've all seen the picture.
We've all seen the picture. Yeah.
Big deal.
The technology doesn't allow you to do those kind of things. The press does not have that power to exclude anyone that it used to.
Like it was an iPhone picture. It wasn't really a great shot either. But anyway,
Thumb is in the middle.
A little bit of a selfie. HUD was years ago. Was House and Home Financing Agency. It started in 1965. And then HEW was Health, Education, and Welfare, which has now become Health and Human Services, those two departments. So correct that civics lessons before we get a billion letters, which I'm sure we already have. I haven't looked. Okay. So let's go to we have a few minutes before the break. So let's go to the meeting of the New York Times. When we last left you here on the panel, the meeting had been called off, and then right in the middle of the panel, it was announced that the meeting was back on, and then it happened at about 2 o'clock, 1:30, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. He went to them, which I thought was interesting, and went up to their board, and there were several reporters who were tweeting during it, some off record, some on record, correct?
The only off the record was when the meeting with the publisher.
Okay. And then the news to come out of it basically, and I apologize if this sounds silly, but basically the news that came out of it were there were great inconsistencies to what he wants to do now as opposed to what he said on the campaign trail.
I'm looking forward to reading the transcript, which is in the Times today. But I don't know about there were great inconsistencies. There were several, though, several key ones. I don't want to talk too much. What I heard this morning from people who were at the meeting.
Always good for a talk show, but go ahead.
They were. I hate the silence. The New York Times people were if not impressed, they at least appreciated that he was there and he gave a wide range of subjects that came up, and it was a freewheeling discussion, and he didn't shy away from answering questions. And at the end of the day, they felt better about him, at least for that reason.
I will restate my point that Donald Trump talking to the New York Times about what the rules of engagement will be or how they react to each other is not news. And I hate that we're talking about it.
I thought it was. And I'm going to defer. I'm not the journalist expert here, so I really want to hear what you three have to say. I thought it was more substantive than that, Rosemary. I thought that
At a news conference. Why is it in the New York Times? Part of it, that's off the record.
Yeah, I'd love to hear what Rich has to say.
Yeah, I think they got into some. It sounds to me from what the Times reported was that they got into some. And in fact, there was some breaking news there, I think, that showed him shifting on some issues that, were kind of a larger part of the campaign.
Rosemary, I understand your point. I do understand your point. But it got this way. We got there a strange way. But doesn't it basically become like an editorial board meeting where you would talk to a candidate?
And we don't report on editorial board meetings. We would report
some do,
on
some
it.
Do.
Sure, we do.
Some
yeah,
do.
Yeah, I mean,
do.
If it's if they're on the record, you do.
I don't know. I'm definitely influenced by All Day yesterday. He was going to meet. He wasn't going to meet. Who sent out the note that we weren't going to meet? It went on and on. Then they're live tweeting from the event. It was a media show. It was not a statement of his beliefs. And because of how informal it was, can you trust anything that he said? Or was he just having a discussion the way we are? We're not setting policy here.
But that's a known issue about him, right? I mean,
it is unknown, right?
No, a known issue. It is a known. I mean, it's a known issue that he takes positions that are inconsistent, sometimes startlingly so.
Last guy in the room.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I think you're still going to have to see what actually gets done. But I don't know. I would think as journalists. Rosemary, would you have not participated if you were at the New York Times?
I asked you that question yesterday.
I'd like to think that I would have set different rules. What was he talking to the publisher about?
We have 10 seconds, so let's
hold on. Okay, no.
Yeah, we'll pause there, and we'll remind people that they can write in panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you all with us. And as we have our pre-Thanksgiving feast here on the roundtable panel, Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Rich Honan, Ira Fussfeld, I'm Joe Donahue. And we welcome you to our roundtable as well, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, and we would love to hear from you. So there is an article in the Washington Post this morning that says, for supporters of Hillary Clinton, the post circulating on Facebook and Reddit offers hope. The Justice Department, it claims, is tallying calls from people who want an audit of the 2016 election. And given the small margins that Donald Trump won by in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, a shift of about 55,000 votes is all that would be needed to change the outcome. The problem is, it's bogus. The Justice Department doesn't count up calls to determine whether it should launch an investigation, and they will not initiate a national audit or force particular states to recount the results based on the volume of outrage they receive from voters. The Justice Department does not tally the number of callers to determine whether federal action is warranted, according to the department spokesman, David Jacobs. Investigatory decisions are based solely on the facts and evidence as they relate to the federal statutes the department enforces. So, Rosemary, as far as the individual states, do they then have a case? Can they look into it? And I know you have said in the past that it's not something that you believe that will happen or could happen, but it is something that perhaps the state should look at.
Yeah, I mean, let me be clear. I'm not looking to overturn the results. I don't think this is any more viable as a cope, as that's put, than that the electors will vote other than how they're obligated to. But what I do think is important is that we look at that voting, because there were allegations before the actual voting that they were going to be tampered with, that the Russians have been looking into this, and all of that got poo-pooed. Oh, you're trying to hide the bad messages about Hillary Clinton. But these were taken seriously by both the FBI and NSA. Intelligence was saying this is a credible threat. So I would love audits to go on, especially in the targeted states. It was Arizona and Illinois. These are three different ones. But a check, it wouldn't cost that much. It would be really great to know that it was solid. That's all.
Isn't there? I don't disagree. I assume there's got to be some kind of procedure. I don't know if it's Department of Justice or if it's the individual, boards of elections within the states. But I have to believe that there's a procedure for them to investigate and to do recounts, within prescribed circumstances. I wouldn't disagree.
I was fascinated by what you said there, Joe, in the article that you were reading to us. Because I know very well that prosecutors all the time get a certain amount of evidence about wrongdoing and then proceed from there from the newspapers. In other words, they read something about an investigative report about the people who are surrounding Cuomo, and then they proceed, a federal prosecutor proceeds to move on that. So it isn't only a matter of counting up phone calls, but it certainly is a matter of taking a look at where that evidence might come from that is done in the press.
Yeah, I think the phone call stuff is stupid. Yeah. But looking at how voting occurs and where there are weaknesses is important at a time when we're looking at how many states now on voter suppression rules and anti-fraud rules. We need information. And this seems to me a lot less frivolous than what's going on in North Carolina, where there's likely to be a recount as the governor, who appears to have lost, is going county by county looking at handfuls of votes to look for fraud so that he can overturn the results. That seems to me a lot more frivolous than this, where we have a credible out-of-the-country threat on our electoral system.
Have they not called Michigan or New Hampshire yet?
They have not called Michigan.
Yeah, Michigan has not been called. And New Hampshire I believe.
New
I think
Hampshire
so.
Was called, right.
Which, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to go ahead.
I was just saying that, it is surprising that 2+ weeks after the election, we're still, this is the technology that we still have votes bouncing around that haven't been accurately counted.
And would Donald Trump be talking about a rigged election if the shoe were on the other foot right now?
That's the ultimate irony, is not only that and the marching in the streets, which everybody feared was going to happen if Hillary won.
And now so there'll be a lot of marching in the streets.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't there a mechanism that kicks in automatically regarding a recount if the vote is at a threshold?
I thought there was, if they're within a certain percent.
Yeah. I think it's up to the states.
I think
it's state,
we saw that before.
But it's state by state. It sounds like, I've heard that 55,000 vote number a lot, but it doesn't sound like those were particularly contested counties. It's just that by carrying those counties, you ended up carrying the electoral votes. Yeah, it's just hard, from coming from the other side of the political spectrum, it's hard for me to believe.
What side is that? I'm sorry.
That, with people like John Podesta and Rahm Emanuel in your corner, if there was a scintilla of a chance that they thought that there was something that could be overturned, it's hard to believe they wouldn't be jumping all over that.
Well, do you remember, it was, of course you remember, but I remember how long it was, but after the Florida vote, it was almost
30 days.
Definitely said that they had counted everything, and it was indeed Al Gore would have been given the state.
It
was a long time. Mm-hmm.
Boy, I tell you what, it's too bad Jimmy Carter didn't come into this country and oversaw the election the way he does the rest
of the
world.
It's really true. We care more about the validity of elections overseas than our own. And that's what, I think you're wrong about Podesta, by the way, and Rahm Emanuel. There's a thing in the Democratic Party, and you saw it with Al Gore, where they act statesmanlike. And actually, that's unfair, because Richard Nixon did it, too. There actually were allegations in West Virginia of wrongdoing. He could have come back and said, I want to check this out. And he didn't, for the greater good of the country. And then Al Gore did the same thing. No, I'm going to concede. We need to get behind him. So Democrats do that. The Republicans fought really, really hard in 2000 and won the presidency as a result. I think this now should be a bipartisan thing. We need to know what's happening with our votes and where they're, how they're being counted and where there are problems. And we just need to know a whole lot more about how it works.
And Rosemary, do you think that the Republicans in the Congress, for example, can sign up for such an effort?
I don't think it's a congressional thing. It's by states.
Yeah. And do you think that the Republicans who control all of these states are going to sign up for this?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think it should be bipartisan because it's happening this way now, but next time it could be they.
I think it's like everything else. I think it's a thing that when you're in the minority, this is the kind of thing you call for, like term limits and campaign reform. And then when you're in the majority, you're saying, I'm pretty good right now.
Skip the whole political system and reporters should be doing this.
And is this panel,
I'm
sure you've discussed it ad infinitum, but are you comfortable, the three of you, with the electoral college system? Let's put aside.
Comfortable.
Comfortable meaning that that for the second time in this century, the person with the popular vote didn't win the election.
No, I'm not comfortable with it. I don't like it one bit, and I don't think it's going to reverse anything. I sense, as Rosemary has said so well, there's a tremendous amount of frustration out there that Donald Trump is the president right now. It's that simple. And so I walk up to people in the street and they look at me and say, let me ask you just one question. I say, don't ask the question, I'll give you the answer. No, the electors are not going to reverse.
We have two letters that just came in the last 5 minutes and asked that a very question.
I understand that it's not going to happen. I'm just asking whether you're convinced that the founding fathers did get it right by setting up this
system. Founding
fathers
had no idea that there were going to be something called political parties. You will remember that George Washington was talking about the evils of faction and recommending against it. No, this thing has evolved, and it's evolved to a point now where it is, I think, as you suggest, intolerable. But there are fixes, and there are fixes that are not going to be a constitutional amendment because that ain't going to happen, not the way things stand right now. But if state legislatures, and remember, this can go either way, the Republican or the Democrat can lose, if state legislators pass rules that say we will order our electors to vote for whoever gets the popular vote in our state, then you could really fix it and real fast.
Yeah, that'd be unconstitutional, though. I think Ira's point is a good point. I think there's the Electoral College and there's a couple of other things in the Constitution that I think are a very legitimate topic of discussion as to whether they've kind of had their day. Even more egregious is the recess appointments. The idea that, you can make recess appointments that was at a time when it took, 8 weeks to summon Congress, when, the British would be, marching on the White House. The fact that we even have this recess appointments clause that both sides seem to abuse with glee. Well, I think that would be another. I think there's a couple of good things in the Constitution we should be discussing. I just think it's hard to find the environment in which to do that.
Well, Rich, with great deference to your legal knowledge and your law school degree and everything else.
As you should.
There are states which have already adopted this plan to award their electors to whoever wins the popular vote.
Yeah, that's a way to get around the Constitution. Sure. The whole Electoral College is fascinating, and the Founding Fathers almost got it right. They foresaw someone rising up in the cities who would be a demagogue and bamboozle everybody there, and it would be the solid farmers, the agricultural core of the country, that would save them. And that's why a vote in Wyoming counts more than a vote in New York State, for example. Ironically, this time, the demagogue rose up in the middle of Manhattan and convinced the people in Kansas and Wyoming that he was the right guy. So they almost have it right.
Well, I have to speak for the Barbara Smiths of the world, who would probably be at this point interject that what the Founding Fathers were trying to do was make sure that
slavery,
a small group of rich white guys was going to make the decisions.
To talk, I thought you were going to say, and speaking on behalf of the Democrats. demagogues.
No, I'm saying it, I think if Barbara or a lot of people were here, they would make that point, and I think that's a very legitimate
point.
And
it also hurt women too, because you were allowed under the Electoral College, you could count your women, so your state had power, but you didn't have to actually let them vote. Which might be inconvenient.
All right, so here's the plan. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Alan has a handful of letters. We're going to go through the letters. Then we'll probably take another break, and then want to come back and talk about the good old-fashioned topic of corruption in the city of Albany, New York. All of that coming up after this. All right, it's letter time. Let's go to the letters. Look at all those letters. Real letters from real listeners, and if they weren't, could we do this? Yes, go ahead.
Thank you, David.
Thank you, Ira.
Letterman. Sean says, there was an article in New York Magazine's blog, Intelligencer, with advisors making accusations of tampering with electronic voting machines posted last night. It's worth a look. And then Peter says, CNN ran a piece yesterday with the headline, Computer Scientists Urge Clinton Campaign to Challenge Election Results. And then in big capital letters, evidence, J. Alex Haldeman, the director of the University of Michigan Center for Computer Security and Society, told the Clinton campaign they believed there was a questionable trend of Clinton performing worse in counties that relied on electronic voting machines compared to paper ballots and optical scanners, according to the source. You know, that's always interesting stuff, because remember, the reason we have voting machines is because people used to walk in, the vote counters used to walk in with a little piece of lead under their fingernails. So that the effort was to get rid of that kind of corruption. And Bob from Albany says, as I understand it, the emolument clause of the Constitution prohibits the president from receiving money or keeping gifts from foreign governments or their officials. How is that going to apply when these governments and or officials start hiring halls and rooms in Trump properties? Isn't that a pretty clear violation? Well, you know, the Supreme Court of the United States has been very interesting in this. They have said you got to prove quid pro quo, which means if they come and they take a room in a Trump hotel, I can tell you right now it works both ways, because I'm not going to a Trump hotel or restaurant. Unless you heard Trump on the phone and got him saying, if you come here, I'll give you this, it's not going to be violative, Rich.
I think and isn't there a legal question? And the Supreme Court said that in a different context. That was not a constitutional clause. I think that was an act of Congress. I thought there was a legal question under the emolument clause, which is another clause that we never talk about. And Joe, you identified this at some point, that whether it applies to all officers or just the president or not the president,
but
other officers.
The president says it doesn't apply to him.
Yeah, I mean, he can say that. I don't know if that's correct. I think there's some legal authority on both sides.
Okay, all right. Panel, this morning on Morning Edition, a former speechwriter for George Bush suggested that the Trump administration should eliminate presidential press conferences altogether, rather than risk the chance of him making a catastrophic gaffe on live TV. Does that consideration outweigh the press's customary expectation of access to the president?
Oh, man. Rosemary, wow. You can articulate this better than I can.
Well, Trump likes the press. He's good
that?
At it.
Oh,
it would. It's. I think it's just more of the talk. It's anti-press talk, and I'm not taking that seriously.
No,
Trump wouldn't do it. He's good with the press.
Oh, I didn't take that as anti-press. I took that as anti-Trump. I think what they're saying is they're so afraid that he's going
to
make such a gaffe that it's better to suffer the slings and arrows of not having a press conference than to accidentally say, you know, we're going to declare war on Russia.
There's nothing he can say that's worse than he's already said.
There is that. Okay. And Barbara says, it may be Trump wants to disassemble HUD because it administers fair housing under these laws. He and his father were fine back in the 70s or whenever that happened. HUD has something to do with administering, I'm so sorry, FHA mortgages. Didn't we have mortgage crisis 8 to 10 years ago? So tell me, how does that work? And that's from Barbara.
There's probably a lot of regulations there that you could eliminate.
I think there are people who would argue, and you know, step in here. But I think there are people who argue that under Cuomo's overseeing of HUD. HUD abused its powers under the Community Reinvestment Act and allowed people who really could not afford homes to buy homes, probably with all good intentions. And that started the slide down towards the mortgage crisis, which was then multiplied by the credit default swaps and people betting on those pools of mortgages.
You're right, Rich. True. And it's amazing how little of that we have heard, because there are those people who believe that Andrew, think about this, decided to be a very good HUD administrator, wanted to make a name for himself, and said, I want everybody in a house. It's that simple.
That was the Clinton policy, too.
That was the Community Reinvestment Act. I mean, that was, you know, and the perfect example of good intentions. You know, home ownership is something that we all want to, you know, we're all in favor of, but turns out if you do it when people can't afford it, it's not as good.
Okay. And then Ted says, Trump's approach is accidentally on purpose. His tweets are for the alt-right. He then walks his comments back when he talks to the press. He is playing everyone.
Alt-right means Nazi.
You've said that again and again. But the point that Ted makes here is a very good one, which is that whoever he's talking to, you're talking to the New York Times, say, they used to be the failing New York Times, but now they're the
great jewel.
A great jewel, the New York Times, you know?
Yeah, but see, I don't object to him tweeting, and I just think that the kind of stuff he's been tweeting is nonsensical. I sort of get a kick out of it. I'm going to sound like I'm going the other side. When he tweets about Hamilton and people say, oh, God, doesn't he have more – how could he find the time to tweet about Hamilton? I mean, it take him 18 seconds to tweet about him. So I'm not concerned about the time. But I do think he – and he mentioned it on the 60 Minutes interview. Twitter is a way of communicating, and, yes, it is a way of getting around the press, and he is going directly to people. And whether I like it or not, if I'm him, that makes sense. As again, though, I think he hurts himself with a large segment of the country when he's tweeting about insignificant things, becoming a Saturday Night Live critic or Hamilton, or which is overrated, only the most honored play in the history of Broadway. So,
Ira, but don't you think there might be a little more method to? I think he's
smarter than he looks.
I think that I've accused the Obama administration of doing this. Of whenever there was a crisis, they would move on to some other issue, and the press would go dancing. So we'd have a crisis with Iran, and they'd be talking about let's sue all the bankers, and everybody would be dancing off after that. And it might be that he's following those ideas, but he just, in a somewhat skillful way.
He's a student of Obama. That's what's happening.
You don't think
I think all politicians do this. I think all administrations do. Wag the dog. There's a whole movie on it. Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Bob says, I don't understand why this job, the UN ambassador, is a very important one in this administration. It's not a policymaking position, is it? Well, I'll tell you, there comes that point when you are before the whole world. Yeah. The question is whether there were weapons of mass destruction. I'm old, and I'll never forget Adlai Stevenson.
Adlai Stevenson did the country very proud when he was UN ambassador.
And he made a real difference. He did.
Yeah.
Okay. Chris says, speaking of eliminating things, I read an interesting article that suggests—
Adlai Stevenson, still back at how many decades back you went to pull that example out.
He was a guy who had holes in his shoes.
Let me apologize for being old, Rosemary.
No, it was actually Rich who did it. I do take shots at you for being old, too.
So. And how many times in a row did the Democrats nominate him? At least two.
Twice in a row.
Well, there was the UN discussion of weapons of mass destruction that happened. The problem is that it's so controlled by the White House that it's not even like an ambassadorship to Libya or England or something.
Yeah, those are controlled also. Speaking of eliminating things, are you done, Rosemary?
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Speaking of eliminating things.
You're fired.
I read an interesting article.
It's Thanksgiving.
I'm the token woman. You have to be nice to me.
That we eliminate the... Oh, no, I wasn't really being nice to you. I was really pointing out I was in the middle of a letter, and all of a sudden you piped up while I was reading the letter.
I'm a terrible person.
Okay.
This isn't really that different from being at Thanksgiving.
No, that's no, right, very much so.
Hey, Uncle Harry, shut
pass
up.
Pass the potatoes and shut up. Put a potato in your mouth.
All right.
Okay.
Let's keep it moving here.
Moving. Michelle Obama has a staff that has cost the taxpayers $1.5 million a year. Since Melania Trump does not seem too keen on moving to Washington, maybe it's time to do away with this role and title, which does not seem to serve much purpose other than ceremonial. Your thoughts?
Good idea. I'm in favor of that. And we could use the extra money to pay for traffic control in Manhattan.
Wait, the First Lady doesn't deserve a staff? No matter who it is?
I think
it's an important role.
I think the First Lady is more than a figurehead
Me
position.
Too. Depending on who. If you're talking about Mamie Eisenhower, maybe not.
Or Eleanor, or even Michelle Obama, whoever. I mean, they've all staked out positions.
If she's not interested in it, why are we forcing her?
Also, under federal law, I'm not sure that you can give a staff to, you know, a male, you know, basically a male employee, and not that she's an employee, but I don't know why she
has no function. In the Associated Press, you don't even capitalize First Lady because it's not a title.
Okay. I think the First Lady deserves a staff.
And I'm with Rich.
No matter who she is.
Sorry. Doreen says, is the appointment of Haley a way to get her a more inclusive Republican out of South Carolina politics? She did authorize removal of a Confederate flag from the state capitol. Can't have it both ways. I think it's a great appointment, and I think, it elevates her
very much in the
national discourse. Okay, David says, when the Founding Fathers set up the electoral system, they had no idea such a huge percentage would eventually be able to vote. At the time, only 6% of the population had the right to vote.
That's a really good point.
Suzanne says, my daughter, a millennial who did, capital D-I-D, vote, and I are looking for ways to balance and broaden our sources of information. Rich, what source did you see? A reputable conservative source to balance with reading the New York Times. Rosemary, we are conflicted with wanting to be aware of what Breitbart's site claims, as well as readers' comments with not wanting to increase its audience. Is it a bad idea to go to their site?
No, you should be looking at it.
What do you make of Breitbart being critical of Trump regarding the Hillary decision? big promise broken, I think, was their headline.
Yeah.
No, that's Bannon's paper. No.
And Laura Ingram. Well, and Laura Ingram. Ann Coulter,
Ann
too.
Coulter.
Ann Coulter. Ann Coulter went nuts.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Charity Wilson.
Trump said in an informal meeting at the New York Times that, he wanted to help her heal. He wasn't going to do this. It's not a done deal yet.
Not a done deal.
Okay, let's pause there. We will be back, and we'll continue right after this. Well, while we were all, while you all were listening to news, we were talking around the table, and we've decided that we're just thankful for you being our listeners.
Nicely said, Joe. Nicely said, because we are.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's a good one.
Thank you very much for writing, and you can continue to do that. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at panel at WAMC.org. Do we want to talk about real quick? Do we want to talk about what happened in Preet Bharara's office yesterday?
Well, you know, we already knew a good deal of this, Joe, about the people who were surrounding Andrew Cuomo, who had been outed already, but now we have formal indictments, and they added another one using the mail somehow, and so now. We have one of Cuomo's best friends, an alter ego, Joe Percoco, facing trial. He and several others, including the seemingly untouchable Elaine Calieros from before. These people are going to now have to face trial, but there are a lot of questions, which is Preet Bharara going to be re-upped, number one? If he isn't, how will this play out in terms of all of this? Whether or not this goes forward is anybody's guess.
Well, I want to just talk about that just for a second because so the two former advisors to Governor Cuomo were indicted on Tuesday on the federal corruption charges, another legal milestone in a bribery and bid rigging scandal that has struck the highest levels of the Cuomo administration. As Alan mentioned, the two men, Joseph Percoco, a close friend and former top aide to Mr. Cuomo, and Elaine Calieros, former president of the State University of New York Polytechnic Institute, who helped oversee Mr. Cuomo's economic development programs in upstate and western New York, were arrested in September. And then in addition, a federal grand jury in Manhattan voted to indict six executives of companies that did business with the state. Here's the line that I want to ask you about, though, Alan. Though the indictment moves the case toward trial, it is not yet clear whether the investigation has broadened to target others. So that is
the secret code there is
stay
Cuomo,
tuned.
Is Cuomo involved in this? Barrera went out of his way to say that Cuomo had not been named when he first announced these arrests. But you know, at very least, here's a guy who almost everybody's expecting is gearing up to run for president of the United States, Andrew Cuomo. But and he came in and he ran on a platform of cleaning up Albany, which he has not done. But it's even worse than he can't get the legislature to go around and do what they need to do. He is also now seriously embarrassed by the fact that two of his closest advisors were really playing petty thief, according to these indictments.
So for all of those reasons you just cited, doesn't this, even if Cuomo is clean, doesn't the stain of those things make it nearly impossible for him to be a serious candidate?
Well, he is going to be a serious candidate, and you can't tell a lot about that, Ira, because people don't really know a lot. So why does Cuomo, who was beaten badly in upstate New York by Zephyr Teachout, who had no money, and then goes down, but he wins in New York City? Why? Cuomo. That's the name. People worship Mario Cuomo. They think the son is the father. We have an electorate, which, as we all know, is not always up to speed on a lot that goes on, especially when it goes on in Albany where nobody knows nothing.
And Donald Trump runs against Andrew Cuomo in 4 years. Donald Trump will not taint Andrew Cuomo with the entire mess of ethics in New York?
Certainly he will.
And probably successfully.
Probably.
I do. We also just got this letter, and just because it's apropos of our discussion that we're having right now, Rich wants to know, our listener Rich, wants to know if you think that Preet will run for New York State office.
Well, let's put it this way. I sure hope he will. I don't think so. He said he has no interest. He quoted Springsteen. He said he's not born to run. You know, he loves his present job. But everybody says that. I think this is a man with more integrity than anything I have seen around for a long, long time. I'd love to see him.
Isn't a lot of that the position, particularly if you do the position well? I mean, wasn't Tom Dewey in that position?
He was.
Wasn't Rudy Giuliani in that position?
And remember when he beat Harry Truman?
Yeah. Did you see the pictures of what the front page of the New York Times was going to be the day after election day?
I didn't.
President.
Madam President, yeah.
And that was, they had all the pages mocked up for that. Didn't want to bring...
Every newspaper in the country did.
Well, but it's the New York Times.
Well, which they shouldn't have prepared?
No. The New York Times, you would have thought, was going to be
You prepare
Hillary
all
Clinton.
Three of them.
I was going to say, right. does everybody do that?
Yeah,
you always do that?
No, I understand that. But Madam President.
There are Cleveland Indian World Series T-shirts, too.
I perfectly understand. But Madam President, across the top of the New York Times, that is not a New York Timesian headline. That was my point. It was.
I see. Okay.
Well. It's not
anyway,
getting used.
Sorry to digress. Get back to the letters.
Yeah,
I don't know. I got up in the middle of the night.
Really?
You don't
not
think
my
so?
Life. I do not think there will be a woman president in my lifetime, no.
Oh, I think there will be.
I'm with Rich. I think there will be.
When are you dying?
Well, that's a fair question, but let's give her 50 years. We don't know who's on the pipeline, but I don't know if Elizabeth Warren could be elected.
She's 68 years old right now.
Hey, give me 50 years. I'll take it.
She may run the next time, though. Could she be elected?
Yeah, I don't know if she could be elected, but I don't think it's unlikely that she'll
be
run.
It'll be like a Kamala Harris or on the other side, the... you know, like a Nikki Haley or something like that. I think you're going
to
see.
But I don't believe it.
We had a rare letter about.
I think it'll happen soon.
We had a rare letter saying, I would love to hear Mr. Honan respond to apparent conflicts of interest that Trump has regarding his $2 million investment in the North Dakota pipeline. The protesters are here to stay and will impact his presidency. Thank you. And that's from Andreas.
I think he has to deal with all those conflicts of interest, whether they're...
So how does he do it?
I think he has to try and divest himself from kind of the non-Trump businesses, but...
He says he doesn't have to do it.
Yeah, and
what if he doesn't do it?
if he doesn't, then he doesn't. Then and then he's going to have to. I think he's going to have to deal with this anyway. I think for years people are always going to question whether what he's doing is because of, you know, he thinks it's good for the country or because he thinks he's ultimately going to make money for it. And I'm not sure that divesting is going to get him anywhere on that. But I think he should go through at least some of the motions.
He should, but will he is the question. And I don't think he will.
I think
he's decided, I'm not doing it, I don't have to. When the other day they said that that he was going to, Priebus said he was going to dot his I's and cross his T's in every case, and he wasn't going to do anything illegal. They knew what they were talking about.
But that's code for, whenever anybody says that, that's code for the law is not very strong on it, so we're just going to follow what the law is because the law doesn't require very much of us.
That's right. Okay, Rebecca says, please do not allow the lie to be disseminated on your program and popular among conservatives that it was the fault of HFA loans and HUD that the mortgage crisis and economic unraveling occurred. Read The Big Short and other books. It was unscrupulous Wall Street traders, fund managers, and bankers who created that debacle, not poor people getting federal housing loans.
She's correct in that. It was while the mortgage crisis, while the default on mortgages is what started the crisis, the fact that Wall Street allowed people to bet on these, basically bet on assets and insure assets you didn't own, and so that every default turned into a multiplicity of defaults on bonds. She's correct. I think it would have helped if the mortgages had not collapsed. But I think she's right in that the Wall Street products made that collapse far, far worse than it should have been.
I agree with you. And by the way, Barney Frank was on NPR yesterday. I was a little worried about him because he's talking about, well, yeah, we did go a little too far.
Yeah, what world do we live in where Barney Frank and Krista, where the people who were in charge of the Senate and House committees on banking somehow escape any liability for this, and the law that was supposed to fix it is in their name? How is that?
Well, no.
Where were they?
I don't agree
with
that.
Where were they?
I don't agree with that. I think what happened is they tried their best, they came up with all kinds of fixes, and now who knows who everybody's working for? I'm going to put it that way. They're saying, well, we went too far.
I'm saying they didn't understand the product. I think I don't think anybody understood the products, and they were taking their money from their lobbyists, and they were the people who were in charge of the banking committees. They should have known this.
Well,
that's all I'm saying.
Let's put it this way. They did try to fix it. And now, with the Republicans running everything, believe me, they are going to cut something off the... off Dodd-Frank. We're not going to see Dodd-Frank and those protections going forward. And you know it, Rich.
No, that's correct.
All right.
That's correct.
Okay. David says, if Trump had won the popular vote but Clinton won in the Electoral College, would you still be calling for elimination of the Electoral College? Or would you be saying, thank God for the Electoral College? By the way, I've been saying that all along. And during the campaign, I had no letters about the Electoral College because Hillary was absolutely going to win the Electoral College. It was after the election that I began to hear all these people talking about, again, the Democrats talking about get rid of the Electoral College. All right. Agree with Rosemary, says Tammy. The anti-politically correct movement doesn't deserve the PC label of alt-right. Call it like it is, as they themselves have often pronounced. You said, what do you call them again, Rosemary?
Either Nazis or white supremacists.
Yeah. Okay. And
bigots works, too.
And Wayne says, I am thankful that...
if you're doing a crossword puzzle.
I am thankful that the late-night comedians will be feasting on Trump words for 4 more years. Hey, that's a big price to pay.
Yeah, that's true.
If that's what you can bring away from this.
Yeah, it ain't worth it.
Michael says, why the long wait to name the Secretary of State? Interesting question. Well, I suspect...
Drama.
I suspect he wants Romney.
Yeah,
but that he has to deal with it.
I'm sorry. I see there's a media complaint. Some of the public are saying that. I don't think there's anything wrong with him taking weeks to make a decision. He doesn't get inaugurated until January 20th. Let's let him go through the process, whoever he winds up picking. I'd rather he do that than, say, tomorrow, you know, Rudy. Let me think. Yeah. Maybe there's some other people.
And right you are, Ira, because what's happening now is he's doing what any Democrat would be doing. He's dealing with the factions in his party. He's trying to bring everybody together and saying, can I get away with this or can't I?
Yeah, and one of the few things that has not made me get sick to my stomach stomach listening to Kellyanne Conway is when she points out that because of the dispute with Bush and Gore, it was into late December before we knew who the president was going to be that year.
Correct.
So there's time.
Yeah, there's also the, you know, the right-wing news is always putting up these grids showing how long, you know, the schedule of when other people picked their appointees, and he's still within that.
In fact, it was not until November 22nd that he offered Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama offered Hillary Clinton Secretary of State.
Yeah, must have been a lot going on.
He should have waited, waited a couple more weeks.
Oh, please, cheap
come on,
shot.
She lost. You can afford
it. I'm not talking about, Secretary of Stateship. Is what I'm saying.
Okay, and here from Diana. I'm thankful for the roundtable as the voice of sane discussion to listen to on my commute home after my night shift.
Well, that's how we look at it.
Your lively banter keeps me awake.
She does have the right station tuned in, isn't it?
We're all sane.
Hello, panel.
Hello.
Donald Trump is listed as about the 335th richest person in the world. I believe one of his greatest motivations is to use the United States presidency to move up on the list. Come on. You know, the fact of the matter is the guy's 70 years old. Nobody lives forever, do they?
We can hope.
Yeah. You do get the feeling it bothers him that he's not in the top 100, though, or something like that. You get the feeling he's that kind of guy.
You still don't know.
Has there ever been a president of either party who did not become rich after he or she left office? I mean, they all move up.
I would argue with you on that. I think a lot of the Republicans came in rich.
Oh, that's sure.
And a lot of the Democrats left rich.
And I remember President Grant.
God.
And I remember President Grant, you know, and he was
deathbed writing his autobiography to get Mark Twain to publish it so his family could live after he was gone.
Yeah, but I must say, we've been getting letters about congresspeople now who get their entire salary forever. Yeah. You know, as a result, it's disgusting, and who get the best health care and all the rest of it.
The other book, Harry Truman's Harry Truman's Great Adventure. Or Harry Truman's Excellent Adventure, when Harry Truman left and went on a road trip of the United States after he was president, you know, packed the car himself, you know, made the itinerary, you know, pumped the gas himself, you know, and was still trying to get some kind of pension. They didn't have a pension yet for presidents.
Right.
It's a terrific book, by the way.
Great man.
Ex-president driving around America with his wife.
It was Mary Todd Lincoln who tried. She needed a pension to live afterwards.
And she got
institutionalized. She needed a pension to live in the White House.
And she got institutionalized, of course.
Well,
her son.
Her son put her in. She had a horrible life.
She really did.
Yeah.
She was very tragic.
She's somebody who would have, seriously, in this day and age, with medication and
she
things like that, she would have had a much
better
life.
But she also, aside from that, she lost how many sons? Four sons died.
It's tragic.
Of
yeah.
She was horrible. And then
a husband.
And then, like Jackie Onassis, she's right there with, she wasn't Onassis then, but Jackie, she watches her husband shot to death next to her. So.
And Mary says, is it necessary to begin the show with the sentiment, 3-1? I thought the panel was open to each other's ideas.
I think that's correct.
I sent Mary a note saying it was a joke. Please laugh.
See, if I hadn't been asked in at the last minute, it would only have been 2-1.
So some people have problems with humor.
I don't feel like it's anyone against anyone. I think we're all just throwing our ideas out there.
Yeah. Well,
some of which are to more or less acclaim than others.
Depends on who's reading the letter.
Peter from Niskayuna says, yes, Rich's aversion to recess appointments makes sense. If, IF, there were a mechanism to force Congress to take up their responsibility to advise, consent, and move on, there are so many judges sitting empty throughout the federal system as a direct result of deliberate Republican obstruction of Obama's appointments that it seems to me Obama should absolutely fill half of them or more just to keep the business of the country moving. Happy Thanksgiving to all. Peter from Niskayuna.
That sounds like the plot of Marbury v. Madison, right?
I'll never forget it.
The recess appointments that got knocked
why
down.
Why do people vilify? Why do people get angry about recess appointments or executive orders, which are perfectly legal to do? If you don't want the president to have that authority, then somehow rescind it in the Constitution.
Yeah, because you're allowed to. Because the scope to which too. The answer is the scope to which they have been taken.
Yeah, but
Reagan did them. For
yeah,
example,
they all
executive
do it.
Orders and more I believe, than they've all been used.
Right.
But, True, but not to make legislation in the manner in which they have been used more recently.
But the more interesting point, I think, of the letter is that the Republic implied the Republicans have won by not filling these federal judgeships. And by obstructing again and again and again, and because there is no longer a nuclear option on the filling of judgeships, you can't filibuster anything except the Supreme Court.
Yeah, but that and ironically, I mean, I think I hope it does not come to this, but I think the congressional Republicans are going to benefit from the whole Harry Reid rule that on certain appointments they're just going to
absolutely
need,
that's you what know, I was just saying
yeah right and that's I mean it's ironic that and you know you remember the Republicans saying you know at some point this is going to work against you. Yeah. I hope it doesn't come to that.
But you're skirting a rule change for flouting the Constitution about advising and consenting from the Supreme Court all the way down to the federal judges. That's actually in the Constitution. It's not simply a rule that either side can change.
No, but true. But Rosemary, again, you're delving into the difference between should and is. Should, you're right. Is the way it is. And that's
never been before until at the Obama administration.
I don't know.
These vacancies for a Supreme Court vacancy for a year.
I don't like it.
All right. Well, let's end there. Is everybody happy? Let's end on a happy note.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Yes. I'm making a big turkey.
Are you?
25 or 26 pounds.
Wow. How many do you have coming to
Not
the...
that many.
Okay. Wow.
My mother's 91 years old today.
Oh, happy birthday. We love your mother.
She commented that every year of her life, she spent her birthday with a turkey.
And I looked in the New York Times had a carve a turkey. Did you see that? The other day, I think it was on the front page. It was great. You pull the wing back, then you cut the joint here, you cut the joint there, then you use your knife, and you push the flesh back.
Neil Golub has a very famous video on this.
And well,
the joint is now legal, the price chopper was on mandatorily on virtually every he was on every station cutting up the turkeys.
Yeah, he's really good at it works. Yeah.
And the joint is now legal in Great Barrington.
Yeah. That's all true.
It's going to be quite a party at your house.
All right. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone. Have a beautiful holiday. Brussels sprouts or not. Thanks to Alan and Rosemary and Rich and Ira. Thank you all. And we'll be back with more show after this.